people want to know what the Fed can do in case all hell breaks loose in the U.S. economy, essentially.
This episode is brought to you by Nadex, the Binary Options Exchange. Binary Options lets you limit your risk and trade stock indices, commodities, Forex, and more from a single account. Nadex is a CFTC-regulated exchange with transparency, free market data, and fairness guaranteed. The future of trading is here now at nadex.com. Futures, options, and swaps trading involves risk and may not be appropriate for all investors.
Welcome back to Bloomberg Benchmark, a podcast about the global economy. It is Thursday, February 18th. I'm Tori Stilwell, an economics reporter with Bloomberg News in D.C., and I'm joined by my co-host Aki Ito, the acting Tokyo Bureau Chief, and Dan Moss, our executive editor for International Economics News in New York. Hello, everyone.
Hi. Hi.
So today, we are going to talk about a concept that has been an almost inescapable topic in financial news, and that is negative interest rate policies, aka NIRP, aka NERP, aka interest rates below zero. I prefer NERP out of all of those. I think it has a nice ring to it.
We've gone from ZERP to NERP.
To TARP, ZERP, NERP, all the acronyms that we love. Basically, it's a policy tool that until a couple of years ago was extremely unorthodox. Now it's still unorthodox, but becoming less so, because some central banks are using it now to stimulate their economies because they're more or less out of other tools to support their economies using more traditional methods.
So on January 29th, the Bank of Japan joined a couple of these other central banks in deploying a negative interest rate. So it is now part of Tory's favorite NERP club, along with the central banks of the Eurozone, Sweden, Denmark, and Switzerland. And the policy in Japan just went into effect this week, so that makes it the perfect time to talk about it.
Yeah, and I also get the sense, Aki, that it was a tipping point in terms of the popular narrative of negative interest rates. Until the BOJ decision, there was a feeling that it was a thing that the Scandinavian countries did and that the ECB did, but that they were real outliers. And while you and our team in Tokyo were prepared for a surprise from the Bank of Japan, it sure wasn't this one. What it's done is it's taken the negative interest rate question away from, like, oh, we've got five questions for Janet Yellen, let's add that one, to pretty much the first thing Fed officials are asked about. And when Bill Dudley confronted this issue the other day, he seemed a bit frustrated to be constantly hearing it. And, you know, people in Congress have picked up on this idea, and Chair Yellen was peppered with questions about this last week. I just really get the sense that psychologically Japan changed the game on this.
That's right. But before we get too far, we're going to start out with a basic discussion of what negative interest rates even are and how exactly they work. And for that, we are welcoming Karen Shaw-Petro, who's here in D.C. with me. Karen is co-founder of Federal Financial Analytics. Her firm advises financial services firms on political and regulatory risk, and negative interest rates certainly could fall into that category. Karen, welcome.
Thanks very much, Tori.
So let's start with just a very basic definition and explanation of what negative interest rates are, because it is a pretty topsy-turvy concept to think about. Just like how we deposit our extra cash in a bank and the bank pays us interest, banks themselves have their own bank to park their excess money, which is the central bank or the Federal Reserve for us. And policymakers can move the interest rate they pay up or down, right, Aki?
Right. And so we don't confuse everyone. These are a lot of different kinds of interest rates. This isn't the same interest rate as the benchmark interest rate that we talked about in one of our previous episodes on the Fed. So if you recall, that benchmark interest rate is the rate that banks borrow from each other overnight. This interest rate that we're talking about today, which is sometimes called the deposit rate, sometimes called the interest on excess reserves, is the rate that central banks pay commercial banks to keep cash parked at the central bank.
Yes, and a negative interest rate here means that a commercial bank actually pays the central bank a fee to deposit money there. They're being punished for keeping too much money sitting idle instead of lending it out or doing something else useful with it.
Which is you know, totally crazy making depositors pay for depositing money.
That's right. So, Karen, why would a central bank want to do something so strange like this? What's the goal? What are the theoretical pros and cons of this policy?
Well, I think, as Aki said, it's a very crazy, topsy-turvy idea to force banks, and if that's happens to banks, sooner or later it happens to all of us as depositors, to pay our banks to take our money. And the only reason the central banks in other countries, including Japan, went below what's called the zero lower bound was because they really couldn't think of anything else to do in hopes of stimulating economic growth. One of the most surprising effects of the crisis, combined with all of the really, really difficult economic circumstances we've had, is that central bank monetary policy tools are increasingly blunt. All the things they know how to do didn't work well, and now central banks have thrown trillions of dollars in what's called quantitative easing. They bought trillions of dollars. I read the other day, $23 trillion of assets, global assets, are now housed in central banks. That's an amazing number, and even that's not enough.
So this is sort of like, you know, I'm picturing the D.C. Metro here, and we have the boxes in the cars where you have, like, the glass, and you pull down a lever in case there's, like, a giant emergency. That's what NERP is for central banks.
So less cataclysmic, and I call it a Hail Mary pass.
That's right.
Yeah.
But in a way, haven't circumstances driven them to a Hail Mary pass? You know, one consistent feature of the post-2008 landscape has been the complete absence of inflation. Many people said that all this quantitative easing would produce loads of inflation. In fact, the opposite is happening. So shouldn't the central banks keep swinging even though they cut rates to zero?
I think one of the things we need to think through, and we don't know the answer to yet, but I'm doing a lot of work on this actually right now, because I think the Fed could keep swinging, the other central banks could keep swinging, but finance has changed a huge amount in the wake of the crisis. And every one of the central banks we've talked about traditionally executes monetary policy principally through banks. And banks are very different institutions than they were from the crisis. They're a lot better, we hope. They're better capitalized. But they don't interact with the economy in the way they used to. U.S. banks right now hold well over $2 trillion of excess reserves at the Fed. And it's largely because they don't know where else to put them.
Mm. So the goal of negative interest rates then would be to force banks to keep less cash on hand and lend more of it out, you know, to consumers who would spend it, or to companies who want to finance things, build things, buy equipment, do whatever. So I guess the goal is to just stimulate the economy more.
The Fed's been paying banks a very low rate of return on the excess reserves. If it went negative, and this is exactly why the Bank of Japan went negative, it's basically kicking the kid out the front door and saying, get a job.
Yeah, and let's also remember, you know, something that Bank of Japan Governor Kuroda has been talking about is that this is going to bring down borrowing costs for everything. You know, the 10-year Japanese government bond yields, those went into negative territory last week that we talked about a little bit. So this makes borrowing cheaper for everyone, for companies, for consumers, and the hope is this will spur more people to spend money.
As contentious as it's been, Kuroda's not exactly a babe in the woods, is he, Aki?
Yes, so Dan, I think that's a great question. I think that's something that we're all asking ourselves right now. This was something that very, very few people were expecting before the Bank of Japan actually announced the policy in January. And, you know, kind of the funny thing is when the news first broke on the Bank of Japan, my mom, who's Japanese and she lives in Tokyo, she texted me and she was like, oh my gosh, this sounds like a terrible thing. I hate it. And sent me these angry emojis. And after the dust settled, I was explaining to her that this doesn't necessarily mean that she herself is going to have to pay money to keep money at her own bank. This, you know, is something that applies to commercial banks keeping money at the central bank. But Karen, could you talk about how this policy would theoretically impact consumers like my mom?
That's a great question. Right now, for the most part in Europe, where negative rates have been in place for the longest amount of time, you've got a really difficult dilemma because the banks are still paying their depositors really tiny amounts of interest to keep funds in the bank, but it's only because rates haven't gone super, super low and because they really fear that if depositors had to actually pay the cost of the negative interest rates the banks are bearing, depositors would just take their money and leave.
Just keep it under their mattress?
Keep it under their mattress, spend it maybe the way the Fed wants, but perhaps in sudden, uncertain ways. There's been speculation some people might put it into Bitcoin, money market funds. I mean, there are a lot of places in markets to put money, and that's especially true in the United States, where we have a very active non-bank equivalent of deposits like money market mutual funds. So the banks are basically, in one way, frustrating central bank policy by still paying depositors a little bit, but in another sense, they're desperately trying to cling to their fundamental purpose, which is taking deposits and making loans.
Right, because if they begin to charge this interest rate, people just won't deposit money with
That's
them.
Right.
And I guess that brings us naturally to kind of the cons of negative interest rates. What could go wrong here? What has been something or what have been a few things that people have been worried about with negative interest rates? And I think cash hoarding is sort of one of the chief concerns here, both on the part of consumers as well as commercial banks who obviously have a lot more cash to hoard. It seems kind of dangerous if they just keep it all in a vault somewhere? How does that even work?
A really big mattress. I think what really worries me the most about negative interest rates is how fundamentally it changes the structure of economic growth, of taking deposits and making loans, of financial intermediation. So you really turn that on its head. You now, depositors pay bankers and bankers pay borrowers. Well, how does that really work after just a few months? Maybe it's a short-term shock, but you're really fundamentally altering the role of banks, empowering perhaps other forms of financial intermediation, again, like mutual funds, buying lots of bonds. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows.
That's a great point. Well, now that we have a somewhat firm handle on what negative interest rates are, we can head into the second part of the show, which is all about the countries that are actually using them and the results that they've gotten after a word from our sponsor.
What do traders want? To limit risk, access every opportunity, and trade on a level playing field. Nadex Binary Options lets you set your maximum profit and loss before the trade, so your risk is always limited. Find opportunities in multiple markets, stock indices, commodities, forex, even economic numbers, and Bitcoin, all from one account and platform. Nadex is a CFTC-regulated exchange with transparency, free market data, and fairness guaranteed. Innovations the financial industry needs, and Nadex already has. That's why we think binary options are the future of trading. And it's here now at nadex.com. Futures, options, and swaps trading involves risk and may not be appropriate for all investors.
So we should probably have at least some discussion about what the outcomes have been on those countries that have adopted negative interest rates. Now, it's a relatively recent phenomenon, given Karen, as you said, it essentially upends the economic model. But are there any preliminary lessons we can learn? And I guess we're really talking about Scandinavia and the Eurozone here.
I think the preliminary lessons are mostly, in my mind, drawn from the Eurozone, because Scandinavia, for example, Sweden, are very unusual. In Sweden, for example, almost nobody uses physical cash. So the impact of negative rates on deposits is very different than it would be in the United States or Japan or the Eurozone. And the biggest takeaway I see so far, and why I think negative rates are such a tremendous threat to financial stability if they stay long enough and go deep enough, is that having a combination of not really promoting economic growth, the Eurozone is still bumping along the bottom, and it's making banks weaker and weaker. They just cannot keep paying for the cost of negative interest rates without having places to put the money.
Well, if it's such a threat, then how did these decisions get made in the first place? These are serious people. Many have spent a lifetime in economic policy making. How did this happen? How did we get here?
I honestly think it's because central bankers think monetary policy, not financial stability. In most central banks, those are on two very different tracks. We learned the hard way in the crisis that if they're on different tracks, you can have a head-on collision. But it's not in the gut of central bankers to think about financial stability. They think about price stability. They think about unemployment. And they're not really thinking through how money moves through the economy. What do you do with the payment system, as Janet Yellen rightly said last week? These are questions the Eurozone is just doing, you know, playing by the seat of its pants here. They don't know.
And this is despite the fact that many of these central banks have taken on additional regulatory responsibilities since the crisis.
That's very true, Dan, but I think it's new to them and it's not built into their culture. And every one of these central bankers came of age as a monetary policy expert and a central banker, not as a bank regulator.
That's the era when inflation was the number one problem.
That's correct.
Aki, are you seeing any of the reverberations from the BOJ's decision to explore negative interest rates? It's pretty early on, and they just rolled it out this week, but are you seeing any impact there yet?
Sure. So I guess the biggest impact so far has been in the financial markets. So the entire JGB yield curve, the Japanese government bond yield curve, has come down. Like we talked about earlier, there is now a slightly negative yield on even 10-year Japanese government bonds, which is completely crazy to borrow money for 10 years and not have to pay any interest. Yeah, it's nuts. The RO is expecting a drop in some mortgage rates, which should help spur the Japanese housing market. There were some signs that it was slowing down before the BOJ decision. You know, the interesting thing here is the foreign exchange market, because right after the Bank of Japan decision, the yen weakened by a lot. But then just a couple of days later, with all this volatility in global markets, it strengthened way past where it was before the BOJ decision, which gives you kind of a sense of how powerless a central bank can be in the face of such large market forces. And, you know, there's this really interesting local opinion poll just a couple of days ago conducted by one of the local newspapers, and people were asked, will negative interest rates spur the Japanese economy? These were Japanese people who were being asked. And I don't know, maybe Japanese consumers are especially pessimistic, but the vast majority of them said no, and only 13 people said yes, that it would be effective.
Wow. Are they really powerless? I mean, you've talked, Aki, about the negative impact on Japanese bank stocks, for example. Is that impotence, or is it diminishing return?
It's a great question. I'm not sure. Like Karen was talking about earlier, banks have already been in this environment of extremely low interest rates for a very long time. So by you know, sending that into negative territory, even just slightly, it's unclear if that would do a whole lot. But, like, again, this is, you know, an extraordinary experiment. It's exciting for us monetary policy journalists, because we haven't seen a whole lot of examples in the past. And doing this quick calculation, and with the BOJ joining the ranks of this prestigious NERP club, one quarter of the global economy is now run by central banks that have deployed negative interest rates. So it's really not the fringe thing anymore, the way it was when Denmark first announced it a couple of years ago.
I guess my question is,
Karen, do you think more banks are going to follow? You talked about the, you know, extraordinary risks that come with this policy, but it feels like it's becoming more mainstream.
In terms of the central banks, I think there are two things that can happen. One is the central bank, like the Fed, picks negative interest rates, and the second is that they're imposed on it by market forces and the policy issues. I think in the United States, either one of those courses has a very different impact even than in Japan, because the dollar is the benchmark currency and the Treasury securities are the safe haven asset in the world.
And yet, is it really such a disaster, though? I mean, you can walk down a street in Copenhagen, as I did about 9 months ago, and not have any sense of impending disaster. And Aki, as you know better than anyone, you know, life goes on in Japan.
Yeah, that was my question too. Have we actually seen anything like catastrophic happen from this very uncharted territory that we're in? Has anything gone wrong yet?
At least not in Japan, but you know, the policy went into effect on Tuesday this week, so there's plenty of opportunity for bad things to happen. I think, Karen, isn't the concern more kind of what happens to the banking system in the long term when you keep negative interest rates around for such a long time?
That's one of the concerns. It's true. I think I said before, and then just bears repeating, we've never done this before, and how low you go for how long you go in what type of an economy, I think, is going to determine whether or not it has good effects, those desired by the central banks, moderate effects, or really, really dangerous ones.
And how low are we talking here? When we talk about negative interest rates, what do those look like in these various countries?
Most of the countries, they're relatively modest, a minus 25 or even 50 basis points. Sweden just went much lower, shocking the markets. Switzerland has done this, and some of the countries like Switzerland and Denmark are also using negative rates, not so much for macroeconomic purposes, but for exchange rate stabilization. Mm-hmm. And some of the analysis we've been talking about applies a lot less to them because they're doing it for a very different reason than the Bank of Japan or the ECB.
And how low can we go here?
I saw a study the other day that suggested that the United States could take rates as low as a minus 4.5, but that scared me so much. That scared me so much I couldn't finish it.
Well, I think this is a great opportunity to bring it back to the U.S., and there is a lot of debate here right now about whether NERP is something that the Fed should entertain, even though it just initiated a tightening cycle here with interest rates. Stocks have been tanking this year, and there's a ton of speculation about recession risk, and people want to know what the Fed can do in case all hell breaks loose in the U.S. economy, essentially. And let's be clear, the Fed still has room to maneuver before it, too, has to seriously consider negative interest rates. It could, you know, maybe do another round of quantitative easing. It could cut its benchmark interest rate to where it was before the December hike. But, you know, Karen, if it comes to it, if things get really bad, do you think the Fed will seriously consider negative interest rates too? And do you think they can even legally do it, which was a question that came up last week?
We know they have seriously considered it. Because of the paperwork that was released a couple of weeks ago showing an extensive amount of analysis as well as legal thinking about negative interest rate policy. We know there are folks at the Fed or around the Fed, such as former Chairman Bernanke, urging the Fed to take this seriously. And we know Chair Yellen said last week that it's a tool. Now, I think, Dan, you're absolutely right. Bill Dudley doesn't want to pick it up, and I know everyone I talk to at the Fed is very, very aware of what a dramatic shock it would be to the market if the Fed were to go NERP.
But again, just to sort of take a step back, Karen, and help us with an overall global argument here. Many of the central banks we've discussed either are inflation targeters or have a version of inflation targeting. And typically that target is give or take around 2%. Now, they're not close to that. They're not remotely close to it. And in some instances, it's going the other way. I mean, should they just do nothing? Is that really a credible response to the era of disinflation / deflation?
Oh, I think nothing would be awful, but they've got a choice of additional tools. Tories mentioned some of them. Certainly adding to accommodative policy in the United States would be politically controversial. Negative rates would be, too. There are changes that could be made to the regulations, for example, and I know this is politically controversial, but one of the reasons banks are sitting on so many reserves right now is the new liquidity rules. There are things the Fed or the other banking central banks could do to free some of this money up and try to get that financial intermediation flow working. I think the fundamental problem the central banks are throwing everything they've got at trying to get inflation up and growth moving, and the financial system is just not responding. And we need to understand why that is, and I think fix for that.
I mean, is there anything particular and special to the U.S. financial system that makes negative rates especially dangerous or conversely particularly effective compared to elsewhere?
Oh, I think in the United States, we have probably the biggest choice of alternatives to negative rates in terms of deposits fleeing the banking system. And you really could see a very ironic condition in which liquidity rules that are forcing banks to keep lots of funds in excess reserves create a liquidity crisis as core deposits go flying out the door in hopes of a positive return.
Yikes.
On that cheery note.
Well, this has been a great primer on negative interest rates, Karen. Thank you so much for joining us. And I guess we'll stay tuned to see what the U.S. ends up having to do over the next few months and maybe even years.
Thank you very much for inviting me to join you.
And thanks to all of you for listening to Bloomberg Benchmark. We'll be back again next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal and on Bloomberg.com, as well as on iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and Google Play. While you're there, please take a minute to rate and review the show so more people can find us.
And let us know what you thought. Our guest Karen is on Twitter at Karen Petru, and you can reach the rest of us at Daniel Moss DC, at Akiito 7, and at Tori Stillwell. See you next week.
This episode was brought to you by Nadex. You know, any long-term investment is going to go through short-term dips and price fluctuations. Nadex binary options let you turn those short-term movements into trading opportunities. You decide your maximum profit and loss before each trade, so your risk is always limited. Trade stock indices, commodities, Forex, even Bitcoin in economic numbers, all from one account on a CFTC-regulated U.S. exchange. Instead of just watching the market's ups and downs, turn them into trading opportunities at Nadex.com. It's the future of trading, Nadex.com. Futures, options, and swaps trading involves risk and may not be appropriate for all investors. We at Bloomberg are proud of our new and growing slate of original content podcasts. They include Benchmark, a jargon-free dive into the stories that drive the global economy. It's hosted by Tori Stillwell, Aki Ito, and Dan Moss. Oddlots, hosted by Joe Weisenthal and Tracy Alloway, takes you on a not-so-random walk through hot topics in markets, finance, and economics. And each week, Bloomberg M&A reporter Alex Sherman discusses market-moving news about mergers in Deal of the Week. From Washington and points in between, meantime, we showcase the intersection of politics and pop culture with Culture Caucus, hosted by John Heilman and Will Leach from Bloomberg Politics. And then there's Masters in Politics, hosted by veteran TV producers Tammy Haddad and Betsy Fisher Martin. This biweekly podcast features extended conversations with candidates, campaign strategists, and journalists. You can find all these podcasts on the Bloomberg Terminal, Bloomberg.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, and any one of your very favorite podcast platforms.